One of the foremost thinkers on the way the internet has revolutionized our lives says that the web has created problems of concentration and that we ought to redesign school curriculums to deal with it. As the author of the books Here Comes Everybody and most recently The Cognitive Surplus, Clay Shirky has thought deeply about the social and economic effects of the net and social media. I asked him first about the ideas in a book by another thinker, Nicholas Carr, who argues that the internet has reduced people's ability to focus on a single problem for a considerable period of time. And I suggested that, anecdotally, I'd seen evidence of this myself, with people telling me that they did find it harder to concentrate than they used to.
My view of that problem is that it is because it's easier to ask a question than answer one. And because we're all much more connected to one another than we used to be, that we can all now essentially waste each other's time at very high scales simply by communicating more. Everybody who works in an office environment sort of recognizes this as occupational spam, right? The mail you didn't need to be CC'd on, the question someone could have answered for themselves. And so once we put ourselves in a situation where being interrupted by other people is the normal case, and we make it much easier for other people to interrupt us, those two facts taken together become, you know, it put us in this tremendously distracting environment.
I guess we've all done this, gone on Wikipedia and looked something up and then found half an hour later that we've followed links and more links and more links and ended up, you know, reading about 15th century Turkish history or something.
Right. I mean, there is certainly that as well, right? Just the possibilities of the kind of distraction available on the network.
But is that necessarily a bad thing, even?
Whether it's good or bad, certainly from the point of view of the bosses, it's often bad, unless you're in the business of selling something related to 15th century Turkish history. But, you know, we used to play Minesweeper, which is to say there have always been kind of bored activities at work. Now they just include much more intellectually stimulating things than Minesweeper. Most of the interruption that people are suffering from is really about essentially being lost in a sea of kind of equivalent opportunities. Some of them about other people interrupting us, some of them about us interrupting ourselves. There was a similar thing that happened, obviously, with the rise of the printing press, where it became obvious that no one is natively good at reading. No one learns to read by accident. And for any society to take advantage of the printing press, we had to institute this incredible curriculum. Anybody who's watched a five-year-old learn to read has seen how much effort it takes for each person every year to get a kid to this point. And we just took on that cost as a society. So I think now that we have this sense of there's this technology which, if we don't shape it to our own uses, is going to leave us distracted.
So we need to design a curriculum for the internet age.
I think that is exactly right. I think in the same way that we teach children literacy, I think we need to teach them concentration. And I think we also need to broadcast those expectations to software developers and hardware developers. Now, when you get a new piece of software, it kind of switches, it often arrives with maximum interruption set to on. So if you get a new Twitter client or what have you, it will bling and beep and do every other thing whenever anybody you know sends out a message, which of course is just it's a ridiculous recipe for losing focus.
What do you think of the even more radical idea that we're becoming a sort of part of a hive mind?
You know, I think I find that logic overblown. And I will say also in defense of the people attacking that rhetoric, there's certainly been a lot of talk on the part of the tech tribe, on the part of my tribe, about this kind of grandiose notion. Humans have always collaborated. We are a social species. There are an incredible number of jobs that we can only undertake when we're working in concert. And what's happened is that we have a whole bunch of new tools for combining our efforts in collaborative ways, which, I think represents an incredible new resource, as you'll know if you read Cognitive Surplus, the most recent book. But I don't think that it represents any kind of dramatic or alarming shift. Humans have always been collaborative. I think it just represents an amping up of our ability to collaborate at large scale and over long distances.
Well, explain for us, you mentioned the Cognitive Surplus. What is it?
cognitive surplus is really two different things joined together. The first of them is just the free time and talents of the connected world, right? We have cumulatively over a trillion hours a year of kind of unstructured time, which we've had for some time now. And the second part of cognitive surplus is the ability to gather that free time together and to treat it in aggregate. So to take just, you know, one example from the book, there's a crisis mapping service called Ushahidi, developed in Nairobi in 2008, but that's now spread worldwide, that allows people to pool their observations during a crisis, whether it's an earthquake or a political upheaval or what have you, and to generate a map, essentially to say, here is where the hot spots are, here's where the problems are. What Ushahidi does, what that system does, is it takes the tacit knowledge of the population, right? Everybody's witnessed some act of violence or some part of the earthquake, and it turns it into something that you can actually see on a map. So that's an example of connectivity allowing us to pool our resources to create something of human value that we couldn't have done unless we were working in a collaborative way.
Does it matter that an awful lot of the cognitive surplus is used up by jokes about cats and tweets about Justin Bieber?
The internet runs on cats. You know, I think it matters to some degree, which is to say we certainly face a choice of how much civic value we are going to get out of this medium versus just entertainment value. But even in the limit case, right, even when you look at lolcats, these cute pictures of cats made cuter with cute captions, it is still the case that someone making or sharing a lolcat is taking a more active stance in the media environment than someone just sitting around watching reruns on television. Which is to say, when you look at even the kind of frivolous cat jokes and you say, oh, well, this is a ridiculous waste of time, the question I always want to ask is, compared to what? If television has been the normal case for the use of free time worldwide as it is, then the threshold above which an activity has to be creative enough to be valuable or interesting is actually very low.
So we're moving from a completely passive role to an interactive role.
To a partially active role. Obviously, we're still going to consume. There will be certainly times when you want to sit around on the couch mindlessly consuming something. But the media environment we have, people my age, I'm tail end baby boom, the media environment I grew up in essentially communicated to me that consumption was literally my only option. Now we're having a media environment in which people can consume, but they can also produce and they can share.
Clay Shirky, author of the book The Cognitive Surplus. And you can hear a wide-ranging extended interview with Clay Shirky, including the question of whether journalism can continue to pay its way and what the new app revolution will do to the old model of the web on our website from this evening.